No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. The time has come where we must reach out to find reasonable solutions to the escalating violence in our society. Over the next several weeks, we'll attempt to start a dialogue that may provide some answers and provide some solutions. I know this is a complex problem, so we want to dedicate several shows to discussing it, and most of all, we want your input. But before we get going, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hey, no problem, Senator Brown. And I want to give the number out to the audience. It's 888-429-5471. And I know this is a very passionate subject because I've had some people, you know, write to me on Facebook and they're very passionate about having the ability or the right to own a gun. And so I hope that if they're out there listening, I hope and I encourage them on Facebook to come and call us. I mean, we won't identify you. We just want to hear your reasons why you feel so strongly. I'm kind of very in a very different position. Being out there in rural Arizona, like on the ranch where my sister lives, I think I'd be wanting an AK-47 because the drug cartels are usually pretty heavily armed. That's what's on the border. And the coyotes, you know, that bring that human traffic over. They bring these people over and they leave them in the middle of the desert. But it's a society now where these people are a lot more violent. And when you're out there, there's only maybe a sheriff and a couple of these deputies to basically police a county that I think might even be as big as, say, you know, one of the northeastern states. I think it's like, not New Hampshire, but one of them, Cochise County, is actually bigger. And so when you have very few, I mean, you have a lot of Border Patrol, but they actually are very controlled by what they can do. But when you have very few police officers who can actually, and we're talking about miles, we're talking where Geronimo held up for years and years and years. And the only reason he surrendered to the U.S. government was because they ran out of water. There had been a drought for about 3 or 4 years, and that finally is what made him surrender so his people could have some water. So this is really rough terrain, very hard to get to. And so in that situation, I do think whatever you need is what you need to have to make yourself feel safe. And if it's you against 6 or 7 guys, heavily armed, then whatever you need is what you need to protect yourself. Now, and a lot of people don't understand this because then I feel you go to New York City, I don't want anyone having guns. Everyone's got something to say. They've got an opinion. You know, when I was living there not so long ago, I mean, Michael, you remember, remember the taxi cab driver who took us to the Hilton and was yelling at it? Everyone's got heated. And so I don't want people to have guns there. There's too many people in a very, you know, small little island, and it just doesn't make sense. So there's got to be some way of approaching this to see that, you know, each kind of situation has its own set of circumstances. And we have to be able to understand what that is, because America is not just one cookie cutter. It's not just one box. It's made up of so many different regions, and you know, it's just vast, very complicated, and very unique to each other's counties and states.
Well, I agree that we need more than one, a single cookie cutter solution. I don't agree with anything else Kathleen said. I mean, in terms of automatic weapons, I don't think anybody needs an AR-15 rifle or an AK-47 unless they're part of a SWAT team or they're, you know, part of the military. But I will say that the fact that Kathleen and I have opposing views somewhat on some of this stuff is really the essence of the whole, what we're trying to do here on the show. We're trying to get people together to come up with solutions that will keep us safe and allow you to maintain your rights under the Second Amendment. We don't want to scream at each other. We don't want to say, I'm right, you're wrong. What we're looking for is different opinions so we can figure out a way to work this out. Because just like there are people out there like Kathleen that believe there's a need for these heavy armaments, I don't
in
believe
certain
anybody...
situations. In certain situations.
Right.
And I'm going to invite you, the next time you come out to Arizona, I'm going to take you out there in the middle of nowhere, and where you see the guys from one mountain range to another, you know, with their, like, the mirrors signaling each other as they're watching you down in the valley. And I'm going to wonder if you're just going to think it's okay just to have a knife to protect yourself. Or
well,
just maybe a little
what?
Pistol. When you know these guys, there might be 5 or 10 on each mountain range at least, communicating to maybe 2 other groups on each end of the valley, and they've got assault rifles. So you can't...
Yeah, we need to find a way to get rid of those guys, I feel. But I would also say that we want everybody's input in this so that we can come up with some reasonable solutions, because I think that regardless of how you feel about guns, whether you feel that you should have an unlimited right to have them or not, I don't think anybody wants to see children shot. I don't think anybody wants to see what happened at the Navy Yard. I don't think anybody wants to see what happened at Virginia Tech. I think we all want to stop that, regardless of how you feel. Even if you feel like the government has no right to tell you what kind of gun you own, I still think that the majority of good American people want to put an end to this kind of violence. So I think the only way we can do that is for us to both sides to compromise and find workable solutions. So we want you to call in with your ideas and your feelings. We want to know how you feel. If you feel nobody should have a gun in the world, say it. If you feel like you have a right to have any kind of gun you want, say it. We really want to know how you feel. And last week we talked about violence in America, and this week we're going to start by talking about some of the kind of peripheral issues that go around this. One of the most startling developments, I think, in years is the fact that in Colorado, 2 senators, John Morris and Angela Gurin, were recalled in a battle which the New York Times has called a referendum on gun rights for America. It seems that the National Rifle Association went in and put a lot of money into this, but so did liberals. Actually, liberals outspent gun rights people, according to the information I have, by a great amount. So there was a big battle, and the gun rights people won in Colorado, and they recalled 2 senators, and I think state senators, and I think the most amazing thing about that is that what the state senators were trying to do were things like limit the amount of ammunition that you have in a clip, regulate automatic weapons. They weren't trying to get rid of guns. They accepted guns much the same way I do, but they were trying to get rid of what they considered extremes, and the people of Colorado would not go for it, and that's the way democracy works. So we'd like to know what you think about that. How about you, Kathleen? What do you think?
Well, I think it's, you know, I have always had a problem with recall, because I think when you come to vote for someone, you put them in office, you don't recall people just because of one issue, because there's a whole broad issues of things. I think recalls are the worst way to waste taxpayers' money. It's a gut reaction people use when they see somebody doing something they don't want that they elected. Oh, I'm going to recall you. It's a terrible, terrible way to govern a society. And I wish there were, I think you should only recall someone if you know they've stolen, if they've killed somebody, stolen for the, you know, the city coffers or the state coffers. But just because they believe in an issue that people must have known that they had when they were voted, I just think this is a terrible way to govern. It seems wherever you look, the recall is the way people just go, oh, you just got elected. Oh, you said this word. Boom, we're going to recall you. It's a terrible way to govern. I'm shocked by it, but they're not, you know, and it's kind of funny. Look at Colorado. They had I'm forgetting the city, the high school. Remember not a couple of years ago?
The Aurora.
Yes.
Columbine. It was done in Colorado, yeah, and Aurora, the thing in the movie theater.
Exactly.
Right, which is what got these guys to try to get the legislation put forth in the first place. It was after the thing in the movie, the mass murder in the movie theater, and I would just add to what Kathleen's saying. I agree about the recall thing. And here in Colorado, it wasn't really the voters of Colorado alone that did this, that they put these people in the office, but then when they recalled them, all sorts of national groups got involved. Not only did the National Rifle Association get involved, but also the Obama administration, other people from outside of Colorado on both sides flooded into the state, and they used this as a club against these people. Yesterday in the Washington Post, they announced that in the Virginia governor's race, Terry McAuliffe, who's a gun owner and a hunter, is going to have $500,000 put against him by the National Rifle Association because they don't think that he, even though he's an admitted gun owner and a hunter, they don't think his positions are strong enough on right to bear arms. So they're going to put $500,000 into the Virginia governor's race in support of his opponent.
On one issue. It's just ridiculous. And I think that's why we've gotten ourselves in this predicament where nothing can be done in Congress because you're getting elected on one issue and one issue alone. And this is just ridiculous. Americans have got, you know, just like I heard from people that I grew up with, when I made a statement, and they got very kind of offended with the fact that, you know, I want to take away their Second Amendment, which if they had listened to the show, you know, we had an argument where I feel that there are times when people should be able to get whatever they want to protect themselves. Because if I'm out in that desert, that is a creepy, scary place, especially when all you can see, all you know is these guys are running back and forth across the border with either, you know, the human slave traffic or the drug traffic. And they do not want you to get involved. They do not want you to get in your way. And they're way out there. They know nobody's going to come to your rescue. And, you know, there's so many cases. I mean, you know, Rob Krentz was killed, a rancher that kind of started a lot of debate about this, and other people have been held up and tied and left there. And I told you last week about the park ranger in the Chiricahuas who was, I gather she was hit over the head or something. She was unconscious when they found her in the bathroom. And although I don't know exactly if they finished their investigation, but everyone believed that it was either the drug smugglers or the coyotes who did that to her. And this is a beautiful park, you know, in the middle of nowhere. You know, how do you deal with the kind of violence that's coming across our borders? So that's one area. But now I've lived in Manhattan for 20 years. And believe me, I had these two women. I mean, passions run high. They were old ladies. They had mental issues. And let me tell you, the minute I walked in the door, they started banging on my walls. And I was sitting there day in and day out, getting bang, 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 bang. I mean, remember, weren't you there once, Senator Brown? I mean, they were nuts. They were nuts. I couldn't go to my apartment, and they would bang all day. They would bang all night. Let me tell you, you get that kind of, like, you know, a slow torture, you know? And I remember my ex got his hockey stick and almost broke their door down. I think that door still has the indents from his hockey stick. So passions run high. And, you know, in cities, what do they say? That the people who are getting killed in the cities are not the people who are victims of crime. The highest statistics are of passion. You come in and you find your husband sleeping with your best friend, or you get in an argument and there's a gun and the wife shoots or the husband shoots, you know, or the boyfriend shoots.
Know. I think that's really what is at the bottom of all this, to be honest with you, Kathleen, is that guns go beyond guns. They're an emotional hot-button issue that they represent so much more than guns. When you say that in Colorado, for example, or anywhere, you shouldn't vote on one issue, I think that's absolutely true. But I think for a lot of people, guns represent a whole myriad of issues that go beyond the guns themselves. And also, back to the thing about the coyotes and the drug smugglers, that's the statistics just don't bear out what you're saying. I mean, I understand that where you live and there's all this anecdotal stuff about people getting hurt by these people.
It's not anecdotal. It's not anecdotal. It happened.
Look, I know it happens, but when you look at the statistics, if you're killed by a gun, you're most likely going to be killed by somebody that knows you. You're not going to be killed by a drug dealer, most likely.
I don't know. I'm sure that Rob Krentz and his family. I think what I'm going to try to do is have a rancher, somebody who lives in this area, come on the following weekend after we have the gentleman from, what is it? What's the organization we're having next Sunday?
Next week, everybody should tune in. Next week, we're going to have Ladd Everett, who is the communications director of the National Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. He's a very articulate and thoughtful young man that really knows this issue. I've heard him speak many times, and he's been kind enough to agree to come on. And you really should listen, I think, because he has some important insights. But, you know, again, you're more likely to be killed by people you know than you are by a drug dealer or in a heat of passion. Or, you know, one thing that I love that the National Rifle Association always says is that if you take the guns away from regular people, honest people, law-abiding people, only the criminals will have guns. Well, the truth of the matter is that these mass murders that we find so abhorrent are being committed by lawful citizens. They're not being committed by criminals. Adam Lanza was not a criminal. The guy from the Navy Yard did have a few minor scrapes with the law, but not enough to take his guns away. The University of Virginia Tech shooter was not a criminal. These are individuals that have mental problems. They're not criminals. They have mental problems. We got to stop them from getting guns. And, you know, 90% of America, 90% that have been polled, agree that we should have background checks, but the NRA stands against background checks.
Well,
and, you know,
the NRA was
for background checks at one time.
And this is interesting because when I talk to the people that I know who are I'm very, very afraid of this whole gun control. The thought is that, okay, if you check and you put my name and you say, okay, Kathleen Gomez bought an AK-47 and two shotguns and a pistol and a Beretta or whatever else, that I'm going to be on this national list. And I'm going to be the first one. When the government goes berserk or the world is coming to end and we are all turning on each other, they're going to come and they're going to take these guns away from me, the government. And I know we've had a heated discussion about this. The thing that I feel bad is I remember growing up, I remember the whole thing of fallout shelters and duck and cover was about pulling your food as a community together, having a place where everyone could go. There would be food, there would be water, there would be blankets. And what I see now is a total change where it's, hey, you didn't get enough food. You didn't stockpile. That's not my problem, honey. You just stay on your side. I don't care if you're starving, because you come over that fence, I'm going to shoot you. And so we've gotten away from, we're all Americans, we're all this in this together, we're going to pull our resources together so that we survive as a community, to it being you against your neighbor. And that's the thing that really bothers me. And when I hear this, it's just like, well, you know, when the world comes in, the government's coming, and I've got enough food and my neighbor doesn't, that's their problem. That's their fault. They should have stockpiled for 2 years. And you know there's a huge movement in this. I mean, huge movement to stockpile food, to build these underground, what do they call them, secure tunnels or whatever, where you can have a generator and you're going to live it out for 2 years, you know? And you don't give a anything to what's happening to your neighbor next door. Even though you may have partied with him, you may have gone to his child's wedding, or maybe, you know, you were good neighbors, but at some point that changes. And that reminds me a lot of what my ex-husband was Croatian. And I saw what happened when, during the Serbian, Bosnian, Croatian war, they were all friends. They had married into each other's family. And then overnight they were killing each other. And maybe that's what people think about. But what I say is that those, the Croats, the Serbs and the Bosnians, have thousands of years of history where they have fought each other. We in the United States, as a very young country, don't have that history to make us feel this way. But yet somehow, in the last 5 years, this is our thinking. And that's what bothers me more than anything else.
Well, I've got to tell you, this is exactly what I'm talking about. And this is another reason we need to start this dialogue. Because I think you're absolutely right. And it's not the guns, it's this distrust of government. For example,
right.
Where did that come from? I feel the same way. And, you know, we've talked about this, and I've said, how can you hate the government and love America? It doesn't seem to me to be possible, because the government is made up of the people. So if you hate the government, you're hating yourself. We're the people that formed the government in America. We elect these guys. It's like, you know, I don't want to get too far afield here, but you and I have talked about this, Kathleen, about term limits. I think term limits are the silliest idea I've ever heard of, because every congressman has a 2-year term limit. If you don't like him, don't reelect him. You know,
well,
but we keep on going back and complaining about these guys, and then we reelect them and reelect them and reelect them.
Well, you know why? And you know why? Because we as Americans don't really appreciate the vote. And we've talked about this. Because if everyone went and did due diligence and went and voted, they would remove these guys. Because I can't stand this, oh, well, you know, my vote doesn't count, and I'm not going to go to the polls, because what does it matter? It freaking matters. If everyone went to vote, they would have the people that they want in office, and if they didn't like him, they could get him out. It really is. You're right. I mean, when you say you hate the government, look at your city council. Yeah, I dislike the city council in Douglas, Arizona. I mean, to a point that I get passionate, a little bit freaking crazy. But that is who we are. And the reason that city council exists is because nobody goes and votes. You know, I mean, they might get 18 votes in a ward. So the people who are corrupt can get themselves elected, whether it's a city council, a state, or, you know, the nation. And America's got to wake up, because if you want to sit there and you want to participate, see your government do the right thing, you have to be involved. You have to be in the government, because that's who we are. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Right.
I don't understand how people.
Well, and, you know, you're just preaching to the choir here, because as you well know, this is my life, trying to get equal rights for the people of District Columbia. But I go out, and I spend all my time, because if our listeners don't know, I don't have a vote in Congress. The people of District Columbia do not have a vote in Congress, in either house of Congress. We don't have control over our local affairs. And I'm out there all the time beating on the drum to get people involved in this. And everybody in Washington, D.C. is on my side, but nobody ever shows up for anything.
Right.
They talk about it. They whine about it, but then we have a rally in front of the White House, and out of 632,000 people, 200 people show up.
Right.
They laid off a bunch of teachers in the District of Columbia, and the very next day, 800 people showed up at City Hall. And also, I'm involved in the government of the district. I'm elected by district voters. I got 207,000 votes in the last election. And we have a terrible city council. I mean,
right.
We have one guy that was sent to jail for stealing money from the Little League. We have another guy, chairman of the city council, who had to resign over lies that he put on government documents. We had another member of the city council who had just left, had just been defeated for election, taking bribes from the FBI, $50,000 in bribes from the FBI. So, again, you're absolutely right. We need to get involved in government and not, that's how America works, you know? If we all go back into our shell and we all go into the little shelter that Kathleen's talking about with our food and water, then our society can't work, because it's right. not about, it's about coming together for the common good to a certain extent. I mean, we certainly in America prize individual rights above all else, but there's a point in order to make it work where we got to come together.
Exactly. And I want to, I'm doing some research about, the issues on both sides of gun control. I always get kind of offended when I hear people say, oh, this is the liberals, the liberals who are doing all this. And I remember going back to my education, got a degree in international service, which was basically, government, political science. And this always bothered me. And then I was doing research, and I want to leave the listeners with this thought. We'll give you the phone number, because surely somebody will call us on this. I think that the word liberal is very confusing and being misused, because liberalism in political philosophy is a view that is committed to three core principles: individual liberty, equality, and neutrality with respect to what constitutes a good life. So when people use the term liberal, like referring to members of the Democratic Party, these are different notions, because philosophically speaking, Democrats and Republicans are both political liberals. They just disagree about which liberal values are more important. I find that really true. And I mean, that's what we're kind of misusing words. We call people liberals like it's such a bad, dirty thing. But I remember in my classes, this political philosophy is what liberalism is.
Well, it
so
is,
I just think it's
and
true.
It's what our government is based on, basically. But you're right. We use those labels to identify people we don't like. If you're conservative, use these labels to identify you because we don't like you. And I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I studied political science and I have a master's degree in political science, and I remember that we used to use terms like communist and socialist and Nazi and fascist as interchangeable, rather than they're different political philosophies. But we kind of group everybody that we don't like into one group and then try to put a tag on them. The same you could have said. What you just said about liberals, you could have said about conservatives, too.
Right.
We like to call people we don't like. There are plenty of conservatives in the world that are not Tea Party people. There are plenty of people that are conservatives that believe in things like fiscal restraint and economic security, that don't embrace the social agenda of people on the far right. I think that you and I have both been in politics long enough, Kathleen, that we understand that if the world were run by nothing but Republicans, or were run by nothing but Democrats, or run by nothing but conservatives, or by liberals, there wouldn't be much difference, except who was getting, adversely affected. I mean, I wouldn't want to see I wouldn't want to see a Congress of nothing but liberal Democrats any more than I'd want to see a Congress of nothing but conservative Republicans.
Exactly.
The system really works by having this interaction and this it's we very often refer to it as an adversarial system of government because, you know, Kathleen who wants her automatic weapon and Michael who wants to take the automatic weapon away are supposed to get together in some sort of public forum and work out their differences so that we come up with a compromise.
Exactly.
And it really is the strength of our democracy. It's one reason that we've done so much better than communist countries, for example, because the extremes in our society tend to cancel out and we tend to get policies that are more amenable to everybody and go towards the middle. But, you know, I see it, the thing you're talking about, Kathleen, I see more now in Washington than I've ever seen before. There are people out there that hate Obama, for example, and
yes.
they just don't care what he has to say. They don't
right.
care what he has to say.
You know, I tell...
We're seeing it now with this filibuster.
Yeah.
You know, they want to get rid of Obamacare because it's Obamacare. He made, I want to get back to guns, but he made an interesting observation the other day when he said, as soon as Obama, if it works, they won't call it Obamacare anymore. They'll figure out another name for it.
As a Democrat, I'm really angry because this administration should have been out for the past year going to every political group, going to every hospital, going to every town with a city hall, explaining what this is. Because I've already heard people tell me, well, you know, I can't get a full-time job because it's going to be too expensive for the little guy to hire me full-time. So there's not going to be full-time employment anywhere in the United States. Which I can understand that. Wait a minute, let me finish. That might be really true. But if it's not, this administration should have done a better job in explaining to the people what happens. Because I sure have looked and I can't find an explanation of what's going to happen. It's just going to happen to me. And that's what scares people. What is going to happen to me? And that's what makes them mistrust the government. So the administration should have done a much better job. They did nothing, and that makes me angry.
But that also illustrates the point that you can be disappointed in something about the government. You can be disappointed in Obama. You can say that the administration should have done a better job at this, and you can still be a Democrat, and you can still, you know, try to move forward on whatever your particular agenda is. You don't have to accept every, you know, by the whole nine yards in order to be a part of what's going on. And that, I think, is an important thing. We see it again with guns, getting back to guns. You know, the National Rifle Association wants to tell you that you can't do anything with guns. You can't make any reasonable changes with guns, because if you do, that would just lead to more changes and more changes and more changes and more changes. And people are convinced of that because you're right. They distrust government on all sorts of levels, whether it's health care, whether it's Social Security, which was a big issue when you and I were at the Democratic Committee. If it's no matter what it is, there are a lot of people out there that distrust government. So it's easy to sell, to say, look, man, if you let them take away your 30-round clip and you let them take away your AR-15 rifle, the next thing you're going to do is take away your shotgun. They're going to take away your handgun. They're going to say you can't have any guns. And it's sad because that's one of the things that keeps us from making any progress, you know?
And
I think
there's
people, you know, on the other side, too, that if you let them have a shotgun, they're going to want a semi-automatic rifle. You know, I think we can say that happens on both sides of the aisle.
Well, it's sad because I think what you and I have seen when we went in, we're working on the Hill or in the Democratic Party back in the early 80s, late 70s, what a person ran on in his platform is what explained who he was. I think that's disappeared.
Right.
Now it's just two labels, Democrat or Republican. And it's like, you don't care what the guy, what he stands for. He's just a Democrat. So, oh my God, let's vote against him. Or that Republican might have some great ideas, but oh, he's a Republican. So we got no way. You can't vote for that guy. When I grew up in Cochise County, they used to call us the Pinto Democrats, meaning that we changed spots because we were a Democratic party that voted for the person, not for the party. And I, quite frankly, after coming back to Cochise County, which has got to be the most freaking Democratic corrupt system I have ever seen in my life, I became independent. And I'm angry at the Democratic Party in Arizona because they don't care about what somebody stands for. It's just a matter of numbers. Let's get this many more Democrats and so we can defeat the Republicans and we can get this thing. It's not about what's good for the state of Arizona, what's good for the rural community, where this guy comes from, like, you know, your city council. It's just like the agenda is so wrong. And the only way that's going to change is if people get involved.
Well, and it's true that this is the Achilles heel of our democracy, where the strength is that we all get involved in the process, I believe. The weakness is that when all we do is label people and put all of their policies into a nutshell that we call either liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican, yeah, that's the weakness of our system, is that we're more interested in winning the individual
yes.
race than we are about promoting the common welfare. And I think, I say this all the time, I think there used to be a thing when we were young called being American, where we all pulled together. You've talked about it when,
yes.
when you talked about being in New York City on 9/11. And, you know, and I remember when I was a kid that there were things that we pulled together on as a nation, not that were disasters, not that were, you know, things that hurt us necessarily, but things that were progressive, the space program, the, you know, affordable education for everybody in this country, is a university system second to none in the world. You know, we all believed in these things and we worked together to advance them. And I see less and less and less and less of that. And I agree with you 100%. Well, we're going to take a little break for a couple of minutes. Please call in and let us know how you feel. Here's a song, another song from the Beatles. The Beatles kind of say it all, I think, lately. We've been playing their music. But this is Happiness is a Warm Gun by the Beatles. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
She's not a girl who misses much. Oh, yeah. Acquainted with the touch of the velvet hand, like a lizard on a window pane. The man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots.
Well, listen, we forgot to give you the number, and I want to do that. It's 888-429-5471. And I know there are people listening to us. There might be 10 or maybe there might be 100, but surely something that either Michael, Senator Brown said, or myself must have got you guys stirred up there. And we just want to hear, because I don't know it all. I don't even claim to know it all. And I know that my friend Senator Brown doesn't know it all. So we want to hear from you, because maybe you have something that can change Senator Brown's mind. You never know. He is an open-minded guy. He's passionate. But, you know, give it a shot. Please explain to us or to him your viewpoint. And again, it's 888-429-5471.
And when she says give it a shot, there's no pun intended, of course. She's not talking about literally with Senator Brown.
I was wondering if you would pick that up.
Absolutely true. One of the reasons that I asked Kathleen to do this show with me, and she accepted, I think, is that she and I have worked hard in politics for a very long time together, and we always saw ourselves as the good guys, right, Kathleen?
Yeah.
We worked
yeah,
hard,
did.
And we tried to help people. We weren't in it for the money or the power. we're in it because we love this country and we know what a great place it is. And we know that we can change things. You can get out there and change things. You know, we just had the 50th. Again, I don't want to digress too much, but we just had the 50th March on Washington, and which commemorated Martin Luther King's March on Washington, his famous speech, the I Have a Dream speech. And one thing Congressman John Lewis, who was an associate of King, said, is this was a little man who never got elected to anything. He was never elected to anything. He changed the whole damn world just by himself. So, you know, each one of us can play a role in making this country a better place, even though I think your average American would agree that America is the greatest country in the world.
Absolutely.
There's still plenty that we can do to make it better, but we can only do that if we get involved.
Yeah, and we have to learn a sense of respect, because I know in the town that I just left, Douglas, there are people that are, I mean, they won't talk to each other. They can't agree to disagree, have a discussion, and then still remain friends. And, you know, I'm sorry, people, but if we take that as the norm, we're doomed. I don't care. You know, talk about nuclear war or bombs or terrorism or chemical warfare. We will have done it to ourselves quicker than any outside source could do. If we stick to this feeling that I can't talk to my neighbor because I know he's a Republican or conservative or religious or Christian or, you know, agnostic or Democrat or whatever it may be, because I think we've said this a lot, the democracy and our form of government is best when we talk to each other. Even though we may not agree, we can come to some solutions that would be able to make everyone feel more comfortable. And if we don't do that, I mean, it's just like these walls are getting bigger and bigger and the division is getting wider and wider, and we're just going to stop. We're not going to be able to function as a nation. We're not going to have a functioning government. We're not going to be able to deal with the issues that face us from one day to the next. And we only have ourselves to blame. That's the bottom line.
Well, and you know what? I think we have to build on the commonality that we all have, not only as Americans, but just as people in general. You know, Kathleen and I are both parents. We love our children. I think that most Americans love their children. They want to see their children do better. They want to provide a better world for their kids. I know that my parents felt that way. I also know Kathleen's parents, and I know that they felt that way. And I think that we have to take these kind of commonalities, regardless of what our differences are, and build on them and say, you know what? The Second Amendment says you have a right to have a gun, okay? But we also need to keep our children safe. We also need to keep our country safe and keep our country strong. And it's not about just individuals protecting themselves. It's about us protecting the whole community. And I think to do that, you need to be brave. Now, Kathleen will tell you that out in the desert, it's a different story, and I accept that. But, you know, I've walked in some of these places. I've been with Kathleen, but I've been in New York City and Boston and Baltimore and New Orleans and San Francisco and Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., lots of dangerous places in my life, and I've never carried a gun.
Well, and this is true. And Michael,
and so I think, you know, we have to be a little brave too. I don't want to take your gun away, but I think we got to be a little brave when it comes to the things that really matter to all of us.
Well, listen, you know, remember when we were in LA or was it in New York and we were in really scary areas, and I didn't have a gun, but I've never been robbed in New York. I've never been. I lived there 20 years, and I lived in what became Crack Alley, 101st and Central Park West, back in 1986, 87. I've lived in some very, you know, when Ronald Reagan defunded all the mental hospitals and programs, remember that was like 1988 or something like that? Was it Ronald Reagan?
In the 80s, yep.
And I remember overnight, there was a soup kitchen, a Baptist church was on the corner of where I lived. And overnight, I was shocked at the number of people on the sidewalk that had been kicked out of these mental hospitals. And that's when, you know, we were having, remember, an economic crisis in 1987, and the stock market took a really huge dive, and everyone freaked out. And so they stopped funding programs, social programs. I remember standing there looking at these people, and I wanted one moment. I was so – my heart felt for them. I wanted to do whatever I could, and then turn around, and there were some scary people, you know, that really, like – I was very afraid. So, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around. I had somebody say, oh, well, you know, the Obama utopia can never happen. But Obama didn't create the situation. This has been here for a very long time, and it's just escalating. And I think why people are getting so upset is that we're seeing so many more shootings. Well, not once a year or once every 2 years. We're seeing them like every month. You know, it's escalating, and to sit here and not address that and try to figure out how to calm us, how we as Americans can work together to calm the situation or to deal with it. Because if we don't, if we just sit here and go, well, I'm standing firm on this and I'm not talking to anyone, I don't care what anybody does. Well, you know, you're going to see, you're going to be two of these kinds of things a month, and then it's going to just escalate. So we have to stop putting our head in the sand and saying, I believe this is the only way, whether you're a liberal, whether you're a conservative, whether you're for gun control or against it. You know, I mean, for guns, against guns control, or for gun control, you know, we got to start talking. And I'm just surprised that nobody is calling. And we won't identify you, but somebody's out there has got to be mad at either something I said or Senator Brown said. So please speak your piece, and maybe you can change your minds.
Well, I'm mad at a lot of things you said, but I'm already on the phone. Let's get somebody else calling. You know, the truth is that these things not only are going to happen more often, but then they're going to reinforce both sides. The people that want to control guns like me are going to say, this proves that we need it more and more. The people that are against that are going to say, this proves that we need it less and less, that we need, you know, if, you know, I could see somebody from the NRA saying, if somebody at the Navy Yard had a carry permit, maybe this guy wouldn't have killed 13 people or 12 people. You know, maybe they would have taken him out earlier. And, you know, I as a liberal would say to you, well, there were plenty of people in the Navy Yard that had guns because it's a military facility, and they did take him out, but he still got 12 people in the meantime. So we've got to find a middle ground somewhere where people and I got to tell you, I can't say it any other way. People that are hiding behind their guns stand up and say, okay, I believe in the Second Amendment, but I'm willing to give a little because what's going on in this country needs to stop. And the people that are liberals need to say, you know what? You can protect yourself in your house. The only thing that we care about are people out on the street and people in keeping children safe and keeping people safe in the workplace, in the shopping malls. Look at this thing that happened in Kenya.
Yeah.
You know, could that not happen in a mall in the United States, that some radical group decides to take over a shopping mall and we have to send in the military in order to extricate these people. I mean, I would say that to the gun people that you also create a greater liability for yourself and those around you when you proliferate guns. Because just like you can have a gun, the guy on the street can have an AR-15 rifle too, the guy that's up to no good. And I think there are people that say they have them anyway, but, you know, I don't think Adam Lanza would have had them. I don't think the guy at Virginia Tech would have had them. I don't think this nut in Colorado would have had them otherwise.
And, you know, I think go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was doing some of this research, and I came across a couple of things called the harm principle, which is you can only ban something if it is harmful to others. So clearly gun ownership leads to harmful effects due to gun-related violence. The equation is fairly simple. More than any statistical analysis can demonstrate, it should be obvious that a person can cause more harm with a gun than without one. So gun ownership is clearly an issue that the harm principle allows us to ban. But on the other side, it can also be used as this what it's called a narrow liberal values, where equality is greater over autonomy. Handguns are an extremely effective tool for leveling the playing field between the weaker and stronger members of society. So those who are prone to be victimized can reduce the likelihood that they will be harmed by brandishing a weapon. I mean, that's what I'm talking about in the desert on my own. You know, I'm the weaker link. I'm the weak person, and I'm looking at drug cartels coming at me. Do I not have...
But I would say to you that it is the weaker people that don't have the ability to harm themselves, because those children in Connecticut didn't have the ability to harm themselves. Those people in the Navy Yard that were on a secure government facility didn't have the ability to harm themselves. The people in the shopping mall or at the movie theater, who would, I mean, you have kids. If your kid was going to the movies, would you say, hey, Mateo, don't forget to take your gun? No, nobody expects to be attacked at the movie theaters. So I think your second equation, that I think is the fly in the ointment, is that those of us that trust in society to protect us, trust in the police and the military and other people to protect us, I don't think we have I don't think we're made equal by guns. I don't.
Well, I don't know. I kind of disagree because, you know, when you look how this country started, right, it was, you'd have to have a gun. I mean, the Wild West, you're out on a ranch, you see a couple of horse guys coming off, you know, in the distance, the dust is flying, you don't know who this guy is. You most likely they're up to no good because there's quite a few of them coming to your ranch, and it's you and your kid. You know, the Southwest, the West, was born on that you have a right to protect yourselves from the bad guys because most of the time they are bad. Now, has that changed?
I understand that, and I see that. But let me tell you something, Annie Oakley, you don't need to do that anymore.
Yes, it does. It still exists. It didn't go away. It's just that they're dressed differently, and they have better arms.
And they're to you,
what?
If the drug dealers are the problem, I would say we need to put more money into the Border Patrol. We need to put more money into DEA. We need to put more money into the professionals that know how to deal with these guys.
But they're not going to be there when these guys come knocking at your door and they want to go across your land and tear down your fence and your horses. You know, this is happening. I tell a lot of people that the border is not at the border anymore. The border goes like 50 to 100 miles into the United States. Because there's so much activity that goes back and forth. We don't have a secure border. And we had a show about this, remember? And
yes,
it's a true state. If people think that, you know, where they see the border is the border, they're out, come down to the border and look for yourself. I mean, because that's not the way it is. It's really quite frightening. And yeah, we can go into, well, there's a market for drugs. So do you legalize marijuana and give the farmers who have lost, you know, I mean, they've closed farms. I think I remember saying this, I think when I was young, there was about 28 farms in the Sulphur Spring Valley where I grew up. Now there's three. And that has a lot to do with a lot of issues, but maybe legalizing marijuana is the way to go. And it's interesting because if you think of banning guns, didn't we try to ban liquor also at one time? Wasn't there prohibition on liquor? That didn't work. So the thing is,
I think we need to talk about these kind of solutions because I think, yes, I think those things all enter into the mix. Well, I can see by the old clock on the wall that we've run out of time, and I encourage everybody next week to tune in to hear Ladd Everett, our guest, who will assure you you will get something out of the show. And then the following week, Kathleen is going to try to get somebody. I'm not going to try.
I'm going to get some good people to represent their viewpoint living out in rural Arizona and on the border of a different life that people just don't get. And especially people back east within the Beltway. And that might be you. although I like you.
Well, you know what? When you say that you don't want to be on a government list that identifies you as a gun owner, I want you on that government list. I want them to call me. If anybody's out there in the Arizona government, when Kathleen gets a gun, I want to be the first person that gets called.
Just don't come knocking at my door in the middle of the night. That's all I'm telling you. Just don't try to crawl in my window. Don't come knocking at the door if I don't know you're coming, because I might shoot you on the doorstep and then pull you into my house and say, hey, look what happened.
Yeah.
I had to shoot him in self-defense. So, I'm sorry. I'm not going to give you a chance to do something to me before I protect myself. But one thing we didn't even talk about yet again is the law that's allowing blind people to carry a gun in Iowa. Oh, we forgot to talk about that. So that'll be next. That'll be
about next week. So if you're in Iowa and you're listening to us and you're blind and you think you have a right to have a gun, call us. But thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week with Vlad Everett, and we'll continue our discussion with America.
Thank you, America.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.